Relevance Podcast. Anytime, anywhere.
Freaks, all up in the club. They like colorful drinks, they like those Doves.
Freaks,
even at Taco Bell. Eating bean burritos and eating up well.
Freaks,
all in the Northridge Mall. Christmas shopping in the middle of the fall.
Yeah, freaks,
trying to graduate school on a 6-year plan, but they still look cool.
Hello everyone and welcome to the March 2nd, 2007 edition of the Relevant Podcast, the audio companion to Relevant Magazine and relevantmagazine.com. I'm Cameron Strang, and here with me is the editorial crew, editorial director Kara Davis.
Hello.
Managing editor Adam Smith.
Hello.
And last but not least, web content producer Jesse Carey.
Greetings, friends.
See, that was affirming.
Yeah, there you go. I feel so affirmed.
Today is part two of the Don Miller interview. If you're just joining us, go to iTunes and download last week's and listen to it first.
Yeah. This is where it gets heavy, though.
It's right. Don Miller 2, The Reckoning.
Don Miller 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, there you go. It's waiting on it.
Anytime there's a 2, I have to say
Electric Boogaloo. Yeah, I almost jumped the gun, but
I always go with The Reckoning. That's my go-to for sequels.
I always go Ernest Saves Christmas.
Don Miller 2, Don Miller Saves Christmas.
No, Ernest still
still Ernest.
Which makes even less sense.
Don's just great there. last week he talked about the new book he's working on, and this week, honestly, is just going to jump into the middle of that conversation. So for it to have any real context for you, you really should go back and listen to last week's podcast. Also coming out, the new issue preview, behind-the-scenes look at the brand-new issue of Relevant Magazine that's hitting newsstands nationwide.
Including extended and deleted scenes.
Yes. You just couldn't wait for me to finish saying my sentence.
Yeah. Sorry. I started, and I didn't want to do that stammering thing. It was kind of like the words started coming out.
Just push through.
I couldn't stop
them. Head down,
power through.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so we'll tell you all the shenanigans and behind-the-scenes stuff that went into the new issue. And also, Don, so because of those two fairly important things coming up, and then your feedback at the end, I'm going to make an executive decision and skip Slices this week.
Oh, wow.
Completely gone. We're mixing it up.
There's a lot of news, like really important news that you guys aren't hearing.
Yeah, I did. I printed out today. I came with so many slices today because, like, man, there's tons of good stuff. And I guess we're just...
I'll put them up on the website.
Yeah.
So put them up at realmagazine.com.
Oh, be careful.
Oh, Lord. Oh, did you break it?
Your hand or the wall?
You got a bone coming out of your hand.
Actually, my pinky goes straight and then takes a left-hand turn.
What happened there?
It was broken completely in half.
I didn't get it surgically repaired.
It's trying to get away from the rest of your fingers.
How did it break?
Playing basketball in high school. Mm. I was actually practicing by myself. and what I would do is our court, our hoop and stuff was sideways to our garage.
Did you put it down to like 7.5 feet? Did it happen on
a
dunk?
No. Left-handed, no. No, so I would chuck the ball up on the roof, and it would roll back down and be like a fast-paced entry pass, and then I'd work on my quick release
shot. Or the ultimate horse shot.
And it came, it was night, it wasn't well lit. The ball came screaming at me off the roof, and I held my hand up, and it snapped my pinky completely in half.
Oh.
Completely backwards. It was like this.
Oh.
This is also the same location where we had some bamboo growing around the basketball court, and so... that same year, I decided that I would do it Mayberry style and cut one down and make a fishing pole.
Oh, who hasn't?
And so I had the knife, and I was cutting the reeds off, and I realized, all right, now, that you shouldn't pull the knife towards you.
Yourself.
And it went, and you see the V in my finger right there?
Yeah.
It cut into the bone. The knife literally wedged into the bone, lodged in.
Wow.
I had to pull it off, and I could see all the white and everything.
Wow.
It was so deep, it wasn't even bleeding. It took like 5-10 seconds for the blood to start coming.
That wasn't a good year for that part of your body.
Yeah. Or that location. It was the same place on the driveway. I was like...
Was it built on like an Indian burial ground or something?
It's also where I almost lit an entire bucket of gas on fire and almost exploded and burned myself.
See, I think you know, kids around those ages, I'm guessing it's around 11, 12... Is that accurate?
17. 16, 17.
19.
Home from
this
college.
This was last year.
A week ago. But that's the age of horrible ideas. Especially, I can't speak for girls, but I know for guys.
11 or 17?
Yeah.
Because bad ideas went the whole gamut.
Yeah, pretty much that whole gamut. Yeah.
Around 11, 12 is when I would jump off the roof with garbage bags to act as parachutes. Yeah. I stayed home sick from school one day and found old ski boots and a ski padded ski outfit in my closet. And I thought, protective gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
you would think
I could climb out from my room. I could climb out onto the roof. And so I got like three big trash bags, dressed up in the padded ski outfit with ski boots, because I thought if anything's going to break, it would be my ankles. If I put on ski boots,
ankle support. Yeah.
Yeah. Horrible, horrible idea.
Because that snaps your tibia.
Yeah. I jumped off. Of course, my bags don't inflate.
Yeah.
I plummet like a rock to the ground, hit, leaning forward, and like you said, the ski boots then jab into my shin. And so all the force is in my shins trying to bend them the wrong way.
Yeah.
Well, they don't bend.
Yeah. That's the thing is if stress is going to happen somewhere, you want it in a place where your body is meant to bend.
Yeah. So I thunk. And just fell over.
How long were you lying in the yard?
I was. My parents were at work. I was alone. I was there for over an hour in such pain. I could not move.
Yeah.
And they came home, and I was really in bed and really not feeling well.
Yeah.
Even though when they left, I was fine.
Yeah. See, the thing is, the lesson that I've learned from my youth is there's certain things I'll never have for my kids to get hurt on. One is the combination of trampoline and pool.
One, which we had.
Yeah, which is a bad idea. And it only gets a worse idea if it's above ground pool and there's a roof within jumping distance. Because I've seen that go bad more times than I like to remember.
One of those almost famous moments.
Yeah.
You know, he's on the Lizard King. He's on top of the roof and jumped into the pool.
I had a friend that had the same kind of setup, except when you ran and jumped, it was above ground pool, so you really had to make it. And you had to make it over a part of a deck. Like, if you came up short, you know, if you just jump right off the roof, you'd be on the deck. So you had to clear. And under the little deck that you would be running and jumping off was a hot tub. And a couple of us were in the hot tub, and a couple guys were up on the roof. And you heard, like, doot. Do, 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 do. And then, you know, you see them fly in front of you. Well, one time we heard do, 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 that sound of someone frantically trying to stop. Like, it's like full speed. I'm stopping. And then you hear, whoa. And so, essentially, he ran to and then did a jump stop and had to just, with both feet planted, just jump out. He made it by centimeters. But I don't think I'll ever forget the sound, like do 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 do.
Every time I've ever done something like that, the moment my feet leave whatever platform I'm on, immediately my first thought is, I didn't really want to do this.
Yeah, immediate regret.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's actually get this podcast started. Movies coming out tonight. We got some really bad choices, although highly well-reviewed. Black Snake Moan with Christina Ricci and Samuel L. Jackson and Justin Timberlake.
Looks twisted.
Looks very twisted. The plot has the word God in it. A God-fearing bluesman, Jackson, takes a wild young woman, Ricci, who, as a victim of childhood sexual abuse, looks everywhere for love, never quite finding it.
Hmm. But it looks so weird. I mean, I don't know too much.
Very well reviewed, though.
I don't know too much about the film, but it just, the trailer depicts it to be a really...
Well, you got a white woman chained up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued. It looks like it could be very, very good, but it looks very bizarre and twisted.
Also coming out, we have Zodiac with Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr., and others.
That looks cool.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that.
Two San Francisco Chronicle employees work alongside a homicide inspector to learn the identity of the serial killer terrorizing the Bay Area.
True story.
Yeah. Problem with that is we kind of already know the ending. They didn't find the guy.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I mean, well, spoiler alert happened like 30 years ago.
But if somebody's not up on their 30-year-old news, maybe they would have gone in not knowing. Well,
they need to learn their history.
So basically, if the person is ignorant enough to not know, you're going to say, you know what, You don't deserve.
You don't deserve the surprise.
Yeah.
The surprise of never finding out.
Yeah, exactly.
Surprise, there's no ending.
I'm saving them a lot of frustration.
And also, Jesse's favorite, Wild Hogs.
Can't wait.
Starring Tim Allen, Martin Lawrence, John Travolta, William H. Macy.
They've got an all-star cast.
Yeah.
Of has-beens. Yeah, William H. Macy, I was really shocked that he was in this.
That right there is an Oscar.
I was
going to
say there was one good actor in there.
Yeah, William H. Macy brings it indie cred. You know, it's really what it was missing.
It really, if this movie, if they had that lineup 10 years ago, holy cow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when Travolta.
And good writers, maybe?
Yeah.
And a good concept.
Bunch of middle-aged guys wanting to cut loose and have a road trip.
Yeah.
Wow. Great. I identify. Okay, coming out in stores. CDs coming out in stores on Tuesday the 6th. We've got, Air with Pocket Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
I love me some Air.
Mm-hmm.
Bright Eyes with Four Winds EP. So, it's just an EP. Save your money. RJD2, like him a lot. The Third Hand, Sunvolt with The Search. One of my favorites, The Arcade Fire with Neon Bible. Ooh, it's a Christian album.
Their CCM debut.
No More Kings with No More Kings. Jackson Waters with Come Undone. And Sean McDonald with a live album called Scattered Pieces Live.
Wait a second.
What?
Chinese Democracy was supposed to come out on Tuesday. Guns N' Roses. Where is it?
Did not make the list?
Where is it? 15
in the
years.
Has-been aisle?
We've been waiting. 15 years, Axel. I swear if you make me wait another 15.
Did they align it to come out with Wild Hogs? Is it essentially kind of the
good
same
one.
Story?
You it's know? The soundtrack.
Yeah, washed up, once really cool guys.
Man. Wait a second. You can't talk that way about Axel.
So that'll do it for your entertainment releases. Up next, not slices, up next, part two of your interview with the one and only Don Miller. Stay tuned. If you missed last week's podcast or have not been into a bookstore for the last 3 years, Don Miller is an author of several notable books, probably most famously Blue Like Jazz, most recently To Own a Dragon. And he stopped in the studio last week and we ran part one of this interview last week, and this is part two. So we're just going to jump right into it. Here it is. So you touched on social justice and almost like trying to earn God's favor, and that seems to be almost a theme right now in Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, there's a shift away from me-centered Christianity to outward living, but it's almost like I'm wondering, are we on a path where we're going to get so consumed with what we're doing for God that we almost lose sight of God ourselves?
I mean, that's always the danger, but you know, we're in a fallen world, and we're probably not going to get this right, and so percentages matter, you know, and 2% of unconditional love from us to the world is a miracle. It's great. It should be celebrated, you know. Mm-hmm. 9% is even better. And so, you know, it's a constant motive struggle. I think a lot of people get involved in social justice concerns for fashion reasons. And I think that's fine. I mean, I think that's a great introduction to social justice. If it's fashion reasons will not motivate you in the long haul, something has to change. But you know, who cares how we're introduced to the issue? You know, and hopefully our hearts will begin to change as we get into it. But you know, I'm convinced that we find God in those places more than we do studying the five keys to the three steps to the nine, whatever. You know.
Yeah, Jesus's life was postured serving and helping and outward. That's it.
Yep. And, you know, we're doing this study back home on the Book of James. And James starts out with, consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. And then the next thing he talks about is finances. So we know that the struggle that these people are dealing with is financial. Then he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, ask and God will give it to you. So now we know how God helps people who are dealing with financial struggles. He gives them wisdom. He doesn't send them a check, right? Mm-hmm. And then James actually says, here's some wisdom. Money doesn't matter. See, the rich people, all their stuff is going to burn anyway. So now he gives them wisdom that helps them with their struggle. And then he accuses them of having a socioeconomic prejudice. Because these people used to be rich. They were Jews. Now they're marginalized in their community. They're Christians. They're no longer a part of the economic system. And they want the power back. And James says, look, the people who have the real spiritual wealth are the poor. Isn't it the rich who drag you into court? So we're studying this in the little home community that I'm a part of. And we're talking about it, and the realization that I came to was that this letter is not written to me because I'm not poor. I mean, if I make more than $3 a day, I'm wealthy mm-hmm. by global standards. So this letter isn't written to me. And then this was what was really convicting. I realized that this letter is written to the people who I oppress. Hmm. And that was shattering for me. I'm going, wow, God is writing a letter to the people who I ignore. Hmm. And that made me not want to ignore them anymore. You know what I mean? And it was just this, I just thought, this is not good. So I think there's something very beautiful about, you know, what's happening in the church in terms of being able to identify and practice solidarity with the poor and the marginalized. And that's where we truly find Christ in those places.
How do American Christians rectify this inequality? You know, that you, like you said, we are blessed and prosperous and have more than we need. And, you know, I feel like when your eyes are open to the needs of the world around you, a lot of people, their reaction is just, I want to sell everything I have and give it to the poor. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you personally rectify this thing of like God blessing you with material things, but then keeping your heart, you know, where you don't care about those things,
right?
That you are a conduit for God's blessings, but you still, as an American Christian, have more than you need. You know, it's like, I don't know. I think there's this wrestling that we continually are encountering, both personally and with the magazine and whatever, of like finding that balance between just kind of what's okay with the consumerism culture that we live in, mm-hmm. and then what really needs to change.
Well, I mean, the real issue is about addiction, and it's about addiction to money. And we live in a culture that's addicted to money. And we're addicted to what money can buy us, and we're fooled into thinking that I can buy this product and this product will make me happy. And we're fooled because the average American sees 3,000 commercial images a day. And so this is, I mean, it's like constantly somebody asking you if you want crack 3,000 times a day. And, you know, but you only take it once a day. You go, well, that's not good. And so how do
just
we
the percentages come
out? Yeah. And so I think, you know, for a follower of Christ in our culture, the best way for me to understand it in my own heart is if I'm not in withdrawal pretty often, then there's something wrong. And so how do I go through withdrawal concerning material issues? Well, the great thing is we can tithe, right? So we get a check, and the check is for $100, and we turn around and we write a check for $10 to our church. And I know everybody's going, wow, Don's like a fundamentalist. No, this is, of course I'm a fundamentalist, you know? This is what God tells us to do. And even, you know, if you think about seasons and crops, every 7 years, God would say, let the field die. And, you know, he would do that because it was actually good for the field. It would enrich the soil. But he would also do it because you could not get addicted to the system. You know, however many years, you forgive all the debt that anybody owes you. And it's this sort of restarting over. And I think that, you know, we have to understand as Americans, we're addicted to money. I mean, we're probably not going to get out of it very easily. But being able to tithe is the way I enter into withdrawal. And I just go, yeah, I'm going to live with less. And, you know, every 7 years, I'm going to let the fields die. And I'm not going to, this way, my life can't become about money, you know? And, you know, we complain about taxes and we hate taxes. And you know, I hate them too. But at the same time, you know, paying taxes really serves me as a believer. Because, you know, every time I get a check, you know, and I just go, well, geez, you know, 20% of that's gone from a tithe and 50% of it's gone from tax. and you just kind of don't care about the check anymore. You know, you just go, that thing left, and you got to pay this guy, and you know, and so, and so, but then you just go, that's better. That's better because the desire for more and more will never be quenched. It will never be quenched. And so I live in withdrawal.
We did a story in a recent issue about Shane Claiborne. Actually, he wrote it. Do you know his?
Yeah, I've met Shane. I love Shane.
And then we got a letter like a couple weeks ago in reaction to it. And the lady was very upset. She said, you know, how dare he kind of position his life as the ideal Christian life, in that I and my husband, who have nice corporate jobs and we live a nice suburban life and make good money, are any less worthy than him because he's chosen to live a life of poverty and help the impoverished. And she was very upset because she felt like condemned. Now, we felt like she was kind of working through some issues in this letter. It was very angry.
Well, and right. She said, you know, God has blessed them so they can give and,
more. Yeah. She said, we are, you know, without people like us out there making a lot of money and almost fueling the system, the pipeline of ministry financially, you know, it would cease to exist, you know. So she was making a case for the prosperous suburban American Christian mindset. It was a very stark contrast. Shane Claiborne on one side and this lady on the other. And it's just so interesting to hear your take on it, the idea of fasting and withdrawal.
Yeah.
Which I think is very
biblical. And I actually think they're both right. I mean, I really think the person who God is supposed to... You know, I went to this...
it's a heart issue.
It is. It's a heart issue. It's what do you love?
Right.
Do you love this? Because here's God's system to keep you from loving it. Right. He wants you to give up part of it all the time. And the stuff that Shane is doing is really amazing. You mean the primary issue, and this is just... me bringing my own theological take and accept this or reject it, is that if they both know Christ, well, Christ is the one who's right. It's not them. It's not Shane, right? It's Christ in Shane, and it's Christ in this person who, that humbles us all. Just go, it has nothing to do with that. But there's still moral and ethical issues, and I think they're both fine. One of the most humbling things that I did this year was, or this last year, was I spoke to, I think it was about 400 or 500 of the wealthiest Christians in the country and maybe in the world, and I think you have to donate at least $100,000 or $300,000 a year in order to even be invited to this retreat.
Wow!
And it was humbling. I'll tell you, these were some of the most tender-hearted, wise, gracious people that I recall encountering. And you know, I mean, here they are. They're at this thing, and they're doing this, you know, and they're having fun too, and you know, getting, because they're you know, a lot of them are friends, and they get to see each other every year. But they have seminars. They have like breakout sessions on how to get around tax loopholes so that you can give more money away. I mean, wow. You know, if you had a session at your church on how to give more money away and how to work your taxes so you can give more money away. How many people would actually? Nobody would be there. When these people are there, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool to be able to see that.
It's a log thing. I mean, it's so easy to throw stones at people who have much. But I agree. I mean, we can't judge their heart, and God really can use the abundance He's entrusted them with. I mean, it's the parable of the talents. Mm-hmm. I don't think God would trust them with those resources if they weren't good soil. You know?
And there's all sorts of stuff in Proverbs on how to manage money, and you've got extremely wealthy people in Scripture who are doing great things, and you've got extremely poor people. You know, I had a real issue with the rich young ruler, and, you know, Jesus says, look, unless you're willing to give up all your possessions and follow me, and, you know, he doesn't do it, and Jesus looked at him, and the Scripture says Jesus loved him. And I thought, wow, you know, I don't know if I'm willing to give up everything and follow Christ. But, you know, my pastor and I sat down and we kind of talked through it, and he explained it by saying that what Jesus was really doing is this guy had said, I do everything right. And Jesus was saying, well, then do this. And he couldn't do it. And it's like Jesus was trying to go, see, you're not okay. You're sick. And you're sick just like everybody else is sick. And then he says, I'll heal you. And the guy says, no, I want to stay sick.
There's a good book on this topic called Living with Less by Mark Tabb. And he talks about not just, you know, monetarily living with less, but just our lifestyles and how busy and how we just cram our life with stuff and activities and downsizing, you know, choosing to live your life more intentionally. And one part of the book talks about investing in people instead of investing in things, and you know, for more money or whatever, just like the, you know, intangible and innumerable benefits of seeing people's lives directly changed. And I think a lot of our readers are getting into that instead of, you know, writing a check to a charity, which is a good thing. They're looking for ways to personally get involved and give back or give money in ways that will help people's lives. I mean,
well, it comes down, if you look at life with the eternal perspective, we're here for a very finite amount of time. Mm-hmm. And if you have that eternal perspective in how you live your life, all of a sudden accumulating this thing or having more just doesn't satisfy. And if I'm only here for X amount of time and I want to be used by God in the greatest way possible, it's, you know, God wants us to enjoy our lives and be happy and all those things too. But I want to invest in people. I want to use the resources God's given me to further the kingdom and have greater impact and fulfill the calling on my life, you know? So I think this intentional living more simply, it's living more intentionally, mm-hmm. and it's with an internal perspective in mind.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed almost the irony of, I guess, the American ethos that on the one hand, people like desperately desire more, they want more, they're, you know, a very consumer culture. And yet at the same time, when someone attains all that stuff, we have an instant desire to level them, you know, that we dislike success. You know, we don't like seeing other people succeed, even though we want to.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of sin nature. It's part of the whole lifeboat thing in terms of us going, we're looking for ways to validate ourselves. The interesting thing about, you know, this conversation is the assumption is that people need money. And to some degree, I think that's true. But it isn't as true as we think it is. My friends in Scotland, for example, are raising three kids, and they want to stay in Scotland until the kids are basically out of elementary school. And the reason is they don't want them introduced to the heavy consumerism that they'll be introduced in America. And I said, what do you mean? And my friend Julie said, my children don't want anything. Hmm. I mean, they have some toys, and you know, but there's not. The back of the cereal box isn't screaming at them about some product that they should have. And we want our children to remember their childhood for each other and for our family. And in order to do that, we have to have them out of the American consumer society.
That's crazy.
My friends in India, my friend Andrew went to India, and they brought toys because they were going to work at this orphanage. And the people who worked at the orphanage said, you know, we really don't want to introduce the toys to children because it creates a lot of division and it creates fighting. And we don't have that if there's not those toys there. We have, you know, games that we can play together. In other words, the kids are happier without the stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, 3,000 times a day, the average American hears or encounters a commercial image. And there's a formula for selling product, and the formula is, one, it's a two-step formula. One, convince the person that they're not happy, and two, convince them that they'll be happy if they buy this product. So 3,000 times a day, the idea is being preached to us, if you will, that we are not happy and we will be happy if we have this thing. So when we think about making people happy, i.e. charity, we think about giving them money so they can buy the product. Mm. Well, that whole system is deceptive. You won't be happy if you have that product. The commercial is an exaggeration. So what truly does make us happy? We did this thing. My pastor, Rick McKinley, is really quite a visionary guy, and he had this vision this last Advent that he wanted our church to do Christmas different. And so he got up in front of the church about 3 months before Christmas, and he said, you know, I just really want to talk to you guys about these things that we've just sort of been praying about as a staff, and we're coming up on Christmas, and normally everybody goes knee-deep in debt in their credit card and buys gifts for each other. But then Rick said, you know, I don't remember what anybody gave me for Christmas last year. And I don't remember what I gave anybody for Christmas last year. But he said, my mom has this ornament on her tree that she's kept ever since I was in elementary school because it means the world to her that I made it for. So our church is going to make Christmas presents this year rather than buy them. So you have to actually put your heart into it. So the church printed a 60-page catalog on gifts that you could make with your own hands. Mm-hmm. And then Rick said, don't go into debt, but the difference, the monetary difference between what you save and by making your own gifts, we want to give as an Advent offering, and and I think went to about four or five different ministries, but one of them was to build wells in Africa. So our church, not a very big church, gave $100,000 at Christmas time rather than going knee-deep into debt on our credit card. Now think about our culture. Our culture has, I'm going to sound like a fundamentalist again, we've hijacked Christmas. I mean, consumerism hijacked Christmas, and it became about pleasing the self and pleasing the flesh and these sorts of things. And the church went right into it and just bought it and went, but we're celebrating, as though the shepherds, the wise men come to Jesus and say, hey, Jesus, we're glad you're born. Here's a Nintendo, Mary, and that's not what happened. They brought gifts to him. And so we just said, well, we should be, Rick really said, we should be prophets in our culture. We should be, and, the people I talked to, including one 13-year-old boy who gave up, who for Christmas got one shoe. He got a shoe, and then he had to buy the other shoe in order to play basketball. This is, this is a month after PlayStation 3 comes out. But I asked Chris, I said, Chris, how was Christmas? His dad had got a stack of $100 bills, and on the bed he had written Belmont Foundation, different ministries, and the kids and the whole family decided together where to put the $100 bills. Wow. That was all the money they were going to spend at Christmas that they would normally spend. So Chris got a shoe, right? So I'm asking Chris, how was Christmas? And he was just glowing. He said, it's the best Christmas ever. And one or two of the $100 bills went to the Belmont Foundation, which is the foundation that... So I sat down and wrote a thank you card to those kids. I didn't write it to John and Terry. I wrote it to the kids. Yeah. But I said, thanks for playing the role of a hero, And that's what a hero does. He sacrifices, he gives up something in order to help somebody who doesn't have, And I think I just hope that the evangelical church in America becomes heroic every Christmas. Rick's going to write a book called The Advent Conspiracy and talk about it. And I just think that would be an amazing prophetic statement. I mean, can you imagine on the news 5 years from now, Christians abandon Christmas, It would just be a greatest story. It's like, well, we just realized that we were basically being hijacked by Target commercials, and we decided we actually wanted to serve God instead, and this could be a beautiful thing.
You're reading Blue Like Jazz, a lot's happened in your life since then. Yeah. A lot of Blue Like Jazz talked about the struggle of not having much, and I would think, and not to put you on the spot, but I would think that your situation's a little different now that you're a successful, accomplished author and speaker. So
except there's no money in publishing.
It sounds like your perspective and your worldview has changed a lot in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because all of a sudden, I could pay rent and I could do things. And I discovered that tithing has saved me in so many ways and in terms of not loving money. And so, in terms of financially, I put myself on a budget. Basically, I live off of speaking. I don't take any money from books. And that still allows me to live in the pinch,
Yeah.
And I still kind of go, now, believe me, I'm fine, that isn't to say I'm sacrificing. Maybe I'm not sacrificing enough. But it was real important to live in the pinch. Sure. And to be able to do that.
What keeps you in a place of needing to trust God?
It keeps you, and not only that, but it keeps you from loving money.
Yeah.
So, when somebody offers you a bunch of money to do something that is really, it's just not, in keeping with your career and what you feel like God wants to do, you don't care. You don't take it, and you can do something else. And you can sit around for 10 hours a day and rewrite the same paragraph, and I can afford to do that now. Right. So a lot of that has changed.
That's cool.
A lot of people our age are, working jobs for the first time and getting, raises, and they just continue to raise their standard of living instead of, putting that money away or doing something else with it. We just assume more and more. Yeah. Life becomes more comfortable.
Get the bigger apartment, get the better car, just your monthly expenses keep going up. It's true. Now, you keep mentioning, I'm going to sound like a fundamentalist.
Yeah,
I love this because you go to a cutting edge church in Imago Dei in Portland that is known to be one of more
progressive.
Progressive. minded churches out there. Yet you keep having this fundamentalist streak in you.
Because I am a fundamentalist. I know.
See, this is the quandary that we find ourselves
in.
Where, you know, you have some postmodernism and you have some progressive thought, but there are some core things that, hey, Jesus said to do this, you know?
What gets me is most people who, most Christian and Christian leaders who are labeled as fundamentalists, they're not fundamentalists. What they are people who defend the Enlightenment. And they defend the age of reason. And they use Scripture to defend the Enlightenment. And I'm kind of going, the Enlightenment didn't help Scripture. The Enlightenment hurt Scripture. And so if you're a biblical fundamentalist, then you subscribe to a mythical or a mystical understanding of truth. Jesus says, I am truth. Well, that's an illogical statement to say the truth is a person. So if you're trying to use Scripture to defend the Enlightenment, you got trouble. Because here's a guy who's making illogical statements. And so the fundamentalist then is going to be a bit of a mystic. Now, that's a scary word for a lot of people. Do I believe in absolute truth? Of course I believe in absolute truth.
Right.
Do I believe that, you know, Christianity is a rational system? Yes, I believe it's a rational. I believe it's a rational system. But there are kinds of realities that we interact with all day that are not rational. To say that, you know, if we were to go out and look at the sunrise tomorrow morning and I were to say, or you were to say to me, isn't the sunrise beautiful? And I would say, yes, it is. And then I were to take you over to a pile of camel dung and I would say, now, isn't this pile of camel dung beautiful? And you would say, no. And then I would say, prove it. And you can't. You can't prove it. One is beautiful and one is not beautiful, and we don't know why. And there's not a rational explanation as to why. What I'm trying to say is there are realities that we live within that are irrational, and yet we all, quote, buy into them.
Right.
And when the sort of fundamentalist who's really defending the Enlightenment goes, no, this is rational, and this is logical, and it's absolutely true, and then they use these systems, I'm just going, are we reading the same Bible? Because if I'm a biblical fundamentalist, then there are realities that are quite simply poetic. And as a biblical fundamentalist, I have to subscribe to poetic versions of reality. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of reminds me, G.K. Chesterton talked about how to be a really good Orthodox Christian, you have to be a little bit of an agnostic because there's so much beyond our comprehension about God, you know, so much that's just completely unfathomable. And it seems to key into what you're talking about of really believing the Bible for what it says leaves so much mystery. You find that creates a richer experience?
It creates a much richer experience. I no longer have to suspend disbelief. Because I think of the sort of, I'm using two different versions of a fundamentalist here, but I'm thinking of the sort of evangelical fundamentalist who's defending these ideas, and I'm saying, you know, first of all, John Calvin would never do it, and John Calvin would call you arrogant. Because he's saying, look, if you don't understand this is a mystery and you actually think you can wrap your mind around this, you are arrogant and you need to be humbled. So John Calvin says this. So you just lost Calvin, right? And then you mentioned Chesterton, who says, he says, chess players go mad, not poets. Because chess players want to understand everything. Mathematicians want to understand everything. Poets can just sort of swim in the sea. And he would say, the mathematician wants to bridge the infinite, the poet wants to swim in the sea. Well, you're not going to bridge the infinite. And so at some point, you have to say, God gets this, and I don't get it. You know? I mean, we have to be able to say that. And when we come to that point, and we actually leap into that place, there's a lot of freedom there, and there's a lot of joy. So we come to that place with our own redemption, for example. We don't believe God can really love us. We're trying to earn our way. We keep beating our heads against the wall. And at some point, we just have to go, okay, he says I'm forgiven. There's nothing I can do that will separate him from me. That's an irrational statement, but I have to believe him. And when we believe him, we find peace and we find joy and our motivations change. And we want to serve him rather than try to win his approval, you know?
It's shifting gears a little, but you now have a blog, and are you going to be involved in other sort of writing projects other than traditional book publishing now?
It's not much of a blog. I mean, yeah. I hit it about once a month or twice a month, but I've been really good lately. But no, I need to do, I need to wrap this book up. Then I've got one more book after that that will probably be called Free Market Jesus, and we'll talk about the effects of commercialization on faith, mm-hmm. on our understanding of faith. And then I don't think I'm going to be signing anything for a little while, and have had a great time working on screenplay, and we'll probably continue to do that. And even if I move into fiction and write a novel, I will write the screenplay first and then write the novel and probably never produce the screenplay, because that process is so phenomenal in terms of getting a story down to, I mean, when you write a screenplay, you know, I'm working on one with these guys, and we've probably spent 100 hours and just wrapped up the story. So we spent 100 hours with four of us in a room writing a story. We haven't written a word of dialogue. And so once the story's done, you actually break down each scene, and there are about 60 to 70 scenes. You break down each scene into its actual beat. And so, you know, here's a beat. This guy's going to communicate that he doesn't like this guy. And then a beat is this guy communicating that he doesn't like this guy too. You know, and then you go to the next scene, and so there are, you know, there are half a dozen to a dozen beats in each scene. And then when you have all your beats down, you go back and you lay the dialogue in over the top. So it's the most efficient story you can get. And it's just a fascinating process to me, and I'd love to be able to do more of that.
Easier or harder than writing a book? Is it more restrictive or more freeing?
I wouldn't know, because I write books alone, and then the only screenplay I ever worked on was with three other guys. That was a breath of fresh air to be able. And yeah, and the difference is, you know, if we were all sitting around and you said, hey, what if the character did this? You'd have three other guys who would say, no, you know, that won't work because we had him do this earlier, so we got to figure something else out. Well, that would take me 2 days if I were by myself. Yeah. I would write it, and then I would go, man, that doesn't work. And you delete it and you just start over. So so the screenplay writing, 100 hours is a long time, but that's pretty quick.
No, but sometimes groupthink is paralyzing, and you need somebody who really sees it to push something forward and say yes or no, even if everybody else doesn't agree.
Well, that's why there's a director, you know? He ultimately says no.
That's true.
Stop talking about this.
That's interesting.
Are you working with Steve Taylor on that?
Steve Taylor.
Are you allowed to say that? Do we have to take that out?
No, you can say that. I can't say much more guy, about so. It.
Yeah, I was doing the math in my head. I'm like, that's why Steve Taylor was at the house.
is it too early to reveal any details or?
Yeah, it's a little early to reveal details, but it's going to be cool.
that's the only detail we need.
I'm telling you, it's a great story. These guys are so creative, and I've not seen anything from the Christian community that looks like this. I think people are going to be genuinely entertained and angry.
So two more books, this one and the next one, and then a movie.
And then a movie.
And speaking kind of throughout.
Yeah.
What are some places you have coming up? Do you know? Or is there a place people can go online and find that out?
In May, I'll be at Machu Picchu in Peru. Okay. The ancient civilization.
So we'll be making our plans now.
In Peru listening right now, be sure to come.
It's a 4-day hike. That caps off at about 14,000 feet, so get started early.
Wow!
Yeah, that's the speaking gig I'm looking forward to most. Nobody's going to be there, but I'll have my camera and bring back pictures.
Describe this. What is it?
Some friends from Alabama and some friends of mine from Portland are joining together to hike to Machu Picchu. So we're going to fly to Peru.
So you just teased everybody that they can't go.
No, they can go. We're going to be there in early May.
We have some pretty diehard listeners. Yeah. You may get some people wanting to go.
There's going
to
be a little bit of guesswork as to actually finding you there.
They only allow 500 people on the trail a day, I guess. And so, you know, book it now and hope you book the right day.
Well, that's kind of the fun of the whole trip. It's an adventure within itself. Like, will we find him? I don't know.
You are clues. You know, it's like, oh, I found Don.
Yeah, we might get up there and hear Don Miller speak.
It's a big scavenger
hunt. That would actually be quite upsetting if I had to get up there and speak.
Especially if you're out of breath or something.
Yeah, I'll be winded.
Can I get a water oxygen mask?
This sounds like a screenplay within itself. Like, I think people traveling.
It's a tragedy.
Yeah, if you need some ideas.
Yeah. It's just a reality show, The Great Race, combined with Don Miller's writers.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Perfect. A perfect fit.
You're listening to Taking Back Sunday. The song is Liar. It takes one to know one. That's the full name. There's parentheses in that name. Before Don Miller, you actually heard Inhale Exhale with Redemption. And at the beginning of the podcast, you heard the featured video of the week over at Relevant.tv. It's Pigeon John with the song Freaks Freaks.
I do believe Pigeon John might be the coolest person alive.
Pigeon John, good, great guy. There's a feature on him in the January
issue,
the Ben Folds issue of the magazine, and it was the coolest two pages in the issue.
Yeah.
So yeah, check out relevant.tv for these videos and more. That's a nice little plug. I need to keep using that. Okay, so what we're going to do now is kind of go through the behind the scenes of the current new issue of Relevant Magazine. The March issue is always our new music issue. In that vein, the cover is actually with Anne Berlin, who is on Tooth & Nail Records and just last week released the album Cities, or 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Released the album Cities, so you can check that out. Great, great group. The guys actually are somewhat local to us, and so we were able to hang out with them for a while, and Adam wrote the story.
I will say that one of the more bizarre experiences of my life, you know, I mean, I've been on the other side of things. I've been a fan and everything. I remember getting the first album when it came out, all that. But sitting in the back of the Relevan with no seats, just on the floor.
Oh, that's right.
Listening to Stephen Christian sing along with Come On Eileen on the radio, you know, in his rock star singing voice. That's one of the more bizarre experiences I've had.
Yeah, and so, like I mentioned earlier, their new album is called Cities, and it came out on February 20th, and I will play a little bit of the track Godspeed. Ironically, that sounds a lot like Come On Eileen.
It does.
I was thinking of doing a smash up with this.
I think he
mash up.
He noted Dexy's Midnight Runners as one of their main influences. But yeah, really cool guys, cool band.
I hear it.
You can hear it. Yeah.
Which song is this? Is this the last track on the album? No.
Wait a second. Anne Berlin really exists kind of as an homage to Dexy's Midnight Runners.
They were a cover band originally, right?
I believe so.
They just played Come On Eileen over and over again.
Apparently, when you ride around in the Relevan and we don't have all the seats in, that's the thing to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
No, he actually thought Adam's name was Eileen.
And it was an awkward first hour.
He was trying to ask you to come sit up on his seat.
But
with
he was
him.
Doing it through song.
We will get to the rest of the new music guide in a little bit, and that's where we will play more things like Dexy's Midnight Runner. Okay, and Slices, our lead Slice is on Hillary Swank. We talked to her. Actually, you guys, podcast listeners may remember when we talked to her for the podcast.
It was in like August or July.
And
a while ago.
The reason why we talked to her for the magazine is about her new movie coming out March 30th called The Reaping, where she plays, well, there's some Bible themes in it, and she plays a former Christian missionary.
Yeah, it's the plagues come back to earth.
It's a horror movie, basically.
Yeah.
A nice, upbeat, happy way to launch the new issue.
Yeah. And then she's going to make Karate Kid 5, I think.
Oh, man, I hope so. I so hope so.
Oh, yeah. On page 26, there's a guy covered in Post-it notes, and that is Sean Romano, our digital creative director, and not Sonny Sandoval, who's about 3 inches away from him.
So a little insider glimpse for you. If you've ever wondered, what does Sean Romano look like?
If you cut the dreads, they might look similar.
True. And covered Sonny in Post-its.
Page 30, we talked to
Rafter Roberts, Jesse talked to him recently.
Yeah, he is on Asthmatic Kitty Records, and his album is honestly, it's pretty out there. It's
Sufjan's label.
And actually, Sufjan Stevens has a role in the album, as the Asthmatic Kitty family all kind of work together on albums. But when I was talking to him, he said that he's producing the next Sufjan record.
Nice.
And I came so close. He's like, you know, it's another state record. I was like, oh, really? What's the next state? And he was like, well... He was like, nice try.
Wait, so, but he is confirming that there's more state records because word was that Sufjan was kind of done with that gimmick.
There definitely is. And I...
Unless it's like State of Mind.
Or else, yeah, he was messing with me.
It's called denial.
But he, like, I could tell, like, that he kind of wanted to tell me, you know, but he just knew it was a big no-no because I guess Sufjan's his boss. Yeah, you know?
And you are the press.
Yeah.
You were wearing your little fedora with the little press cards.
As trustworthy as you sounded.
Yeah. And so...
Weren't you trying to cajole him? Like, come on, you can tell me.
Yeah, I was like, I at least got to try. And he's like, yeah, I know, I just can't. Because we were building up. He at one point in the conversation, he's like, hang on one sec. I have to... my son is crying. He had a new baby. And so I started asking him how old his son was. And we started to develop a rapport.
Disarm him with trust.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, this is a good guy. He's not going to go, you know, talk about me on a podcast to thousands of people.
You see, that's how we get in with artists. We, you know, we gain their trust. We have dinner at their house a few nights. Yeah. You know,
we ride around in vans with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and then wham.
And so finally you gave him the ultimatum. Either you tell me or I'm going to put a picture of you in a chicken suit in the magazine. And if you're looking at page 30, you know which happened.
He didn't tell us.
There's a grown man in a beard wearing a full chicken outfit.
Jesse took that picture. When he was hanging out at Rafter's house.
The interesting thing to me is that this guy's so indie and his own album is so out there and so obscure, but the way he actually makes his money is by writing like commercial jingles for like Nike, Citibank, Jeep, Brawny, Virgin Mobile, and McDonald's. Like the Ba-da-ba-ba-ba campaign
is
this guy.
Mm-hmm. And you know the whistling on the Citibank commercials? Like if you watch from the Citibank...
Do it?
I can't whistle.
Oh wow.
That's as close as I can get. Which you'll probably know the ad campaign right away from that. But that's actually him whistling. And he's actually a super sought after guy when it comes to
sought after whistler.
Yeah.
When it comes to whistling competitions and chicken races. Chicken fights.
Yeah. So he's a pretty interesting fella.
So we just spent the last 12 minutes talking about 2/3 of one page.
We may have 116
page issue.
We may have to speed this one up.
All right. We also talked to Jill Phillips, who is a songwriter that you probably know, singer-songwriter. She's part of the Square Peg Alliance, which also is like Derek Webb and Andrew Peterson and a bunch of those types of artists.
And she was in the studio back in December and sang some BVGs. No, BGVs. What do you call them?
Background vocals. Yeah. You just say background vocals.
Well, I think BBGs is what they call it in the biz.
Yeah, which is what they call the business.
In the biz.
With Andrew Peterson on the Christmas podcast special.
So some of the harmonizing was Joe Phillips. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. The scene, this issue is actually Vancouver. Vancouver happens to also be the native homeland of our creative director, Alistair Stern.
Yeah, and he tried to sneak something by us in editorial as one of the picture captions. That now, if you see it, if you get the magazine, it'll say Community and Metropolis. Originally said the greatest city in all the world.
That's funny. Yeah, he keeps us on our toes because he keeps trying to put his face in the magazine as well. On the cover, there's a reflection in Christian's sunglasses, and you can actually see the photographer reflected in the sunglasses.
Yeah.
Alistair, I walked by his desk, and he had this picture of himself, like, all cut out. And I was like, why do you have a picture of yourself all cut out? And one of the other designers goes, he was going to put it in the sunglasses. They tattled on him. And they were, so he was going to try and slip his face on the cover. Yeah.
Oh, you got to respect that.
I respect it. I'm glad I caught him, though. The Revolution is actually on Peace Gospel Ministries, which is headed by Kirby Trappolino. I just like saying his name.
Trappolino.
Kirby Trappolino. Isn't it's like one of those things, if you saw him in Japanese person, you would never just say, hey, Kirby. You'd say, hey, Kirby Trappolino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like we had a guy interning for a while whose first and last name was John Carl, but everyone just called him John Carl.
Yeah, everyone called him John Carl.
Nobody ever called him John.
Yeah.
Or Johnny Boy, as he preferred to be called. Yeah.
As he demanded.
Or Jay Skillet.
Peace Gospel is actually doing some really cool work in India to support. They've opened an orphanage there, and they support a lot of local ministries there. But what they do, instead of just raising donations and giving handouts to, you know, missionaries and people, they actually, what they're doing is microeconomics, that they are actually going in and supporting indigenous ministries, and they are like buying buffalo and doing like farms to then the local orphanage can do milk and sell goods and stuff from this buffalo or goat farm, and self-sustaining. It continually brings in more revenue to keep the orphanage afloat. So over here in the U.S., Peace Gospel will go in and try and raise money to start something. Like they'll help start the new work, or they'll start the new farm, but then that's it. Like every month you don't have to keep sending checks because it's self-sustaining, and it empowers the local people to own it and to further the work much further than, you know, just getting checks from the U.S. every month.
It's a great model.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
I think that it's honestly the new direction of a lot of social activism as far as poverty goes.
Yeah. Well, it's changing people's economic situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, their spiritual situation.
Yeah. It's ending the cycle.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you can give a man fish, he eats for a day. You can teach a man to fish, and he eats for a lifetime.
That might just be the lead to the story.
I know.
Oh.
That story was...
Just reading it.
Story was expertly written, by the way.
You can give a man a buffalo and feed him for about 3 months. Or you can
eventually,
a man to milk a buffalo and start my business.
Man,
eventually, he'll beg to have something other than buffalo for dinner. But you'll keep telling him, I gave you that buffalo.
And that thing has got a ton of meat on it.
This place is swarming with Olympians.
This farm
is swarming with Olympians.
Didn't that come up on a recent podcast?
Yes.
You said it.
Oh.
About the restaurant serving buffalo meat and how Olympians like it.
Yes, they do. Lean.
Bloodthirsty Olympians.
Yes.
Someone on the message board posted and said that they didn't find it funny, and then someone posted right after, like, are you an Olympian? Like, why would you take offense to that?
There's this thread where people were just kind of quoting their favorite podcast quotes, the funniest moments. This person, their only post was, I did not find the Olympian comment very funny.
To be fair, it wasn't their only post.
Well, not in that thread. I mean, it's like they didn't like say, well, I like this.
Yeah. Why would they only say, with no explanation, not like, you know, that's hey, why, Olympians are
no
people
context
too.
Context or why.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was so funny. The next person, like, are you an Olympian?
The funniest part of that thread to me was it didn't turn into my favorite podcast quotes thread. It turned into my favorite Kara Davis quotes thread because she
really
has all the best quotes in the podcast.
Yeah, I should go check that out.
Oh, seriously. The person posted that actually I laughed out loud reading and would describe as probably my favorite podcast moment ever is, I think squirrels appreciate not having the responsibility of flying. Even taken out of context, that's one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
You know, I need to, as we go through the magazine, I need to, you know, raise awareness. We overlooked one incredibly important page, probably the most important page in the magazine.
Your column?
Yeah, page 20, my column. Or page whatever, 20. Where
16,
is it?
16.
It didn't make the
magazine. Oh my God. I'm sorry, we had to cut it. We ran a little long.
So columnists this time, we have Jim Palmer, Holly Rankin Zaire, Jason Boyette. Excellent columns this issue. I was actually quite impressed.
Very good.
We start the feature section off with a pretty in-depth article that Kara did talking to Gary Haugen from International Justice Mission.
Yeah, I actually flew to D.C. and got to check out their offices and talk with Gary and hang out with him for a day and talk with the staff, and just amazing the stuff that they're doing, and just to kind of to more fully understand the gravity of their work and the importance of it and how we can all, you know, play a part in it.
Yeah, it's a pretty powerful powerful story. Even the imagery, especially on the second page where you see, you know, bones lying in the
church in Rwanda that's just filled with human bones.
Yeah. If you notice the opening spread, the opening photo, it's full page. And if you look at it, it looks like Gary standing in a empty, dilapidated church. You know, what you don't realize immediately is in the foreground, those are human skulls. And it, you realize that he's standing where a mass murder happened with the genocide in Rwanda. It was, yeah. It's incredibly powerful. Story.
And Gary Haugen heads up the International Justice Mission, and before he started that, he headed up the investigation after the Rwandan genocide. And so this is like, these pictures are the first time that he went back to Rwanda after that, and that church has been set up as kind of a memorial.
Flipping the page, we kind of totally different note is an article on how to reduce your environmental footprint. 20 tips on ways that you can go green in a month. We kind of break it down by week. And just some very practical stuff to do that's kind of like more responsible living. You act like you want to say something.
No, I just had a weird dream that kind of spawned this article, but it was hormone-induced.
I thought spawned the article. I thought an editorial meeting spawned the article.
Did the dream happen before that?
What was the dream?
We're talking about behind the scenes here.
This is really behind the scenes than your dreams.
That's way behind the scenes.
So I was dreaming about work last night.
This incredibly vivid dream that I was at work and I visited a website that showed practical ways that people could reduce their environmental footprint. I felt like, you know, we hear about we need to reduce it all the time, but there was no place where things were specifically outlined, you know, a step-by-step basis how you could do that. And I remember seeing this website in my dream and going to Jesse saying, hey, Jesse, this is an awesome website. And you could actually buy things on the website, like things to make your toilet not run, or, you know, things to fix practical household items that you could buy there. And I told Jesse to post a link in Slices.
Wow. See, that's such a useful dream. Like, I never have dreams like that. I'll have these dreams where I'm really stressed out. I'm trying to come up with like a lead slice, and I, you know, finally nail something down like, oh, this is going to be great. And I'll wake up the next morning like, Steven Seagal? That's not a good lead slice.
Mine just take nonsensical turns, you know, like now I'm on the golf course with an astronaut, you know?
I don't dream. Everybody dreams. I don't remember them. Do you ever have moments, speaking of the environment, that where you actually are going, you know what? I'm doing a really bad thing to the environment right now.
Yeah.
I had one of those last night.
I thought you said you don't dream.
No, I'm not talking about dreaming. Like, I actually have moments where you're like, I shouldn't be doing this.
Like eating at Burger King.
Were you like dumping tanks of oil in your yard?
Just pouring mercury in an aquifer or something.
Last night I get home and there's baseball fields near my house. And so the road is totally clogged with parent traffic and all this stuff. I couldn't park anywhere near my house, right? I was pretty frustrated. So as I walk up to my house, I go and turn the sprinklers on to punish the people who parked right in front of my house, and then to discourage anybody from parking anywhere else near my house.
That's pretty
smart. So I turned the sprinklers on, right? And I actually thought, and it worked, right?
Right.
It worked. It totally worked. And I thought, I just wasted how many gallons of water?
Yeah.
Because I don't want people parking in front of my house.
I've had that happen too. You know, I'm slashing and burning a rainforest. I'm like, I really shouldn't do this.
Yeah. I was burning mounds of tires.
Species.
I hit the button to turn them on, and I hear the, you know, I'd come on, and I had this simultaneous sense of extreme satisfaction and complete regret. Like, oh no, I shouldn't have done this. And then I didn't know how to turn it off. So now I need to do something, one of the 20 tips to counterbalance
you just did.
That's my passive aggressive environmental sabotage.
That's how I feel when I collect all those seal pelts.
Yeah, man, extreme, I really should
satisfaction
have done that.
And simultaneous regret.
Yeah, like, yeah. Man.
Well, you're gonna get a lot of money for the seal pelts.
Man, these seal pelts. I'm really gonna make out on this deal. Too bad all the baby seals had to die.
I'm not saying it wasn't fun, but man, I feel kind of bad.
That's exactly my feeling last night. Yeah. I'm not saying it wasn't fun, but I actually felt kind of bad. Watching the parents pull up and the sprinklers were going, and then they go, oh, and then they had to pull away because they would have had to got out in the water or spraying their children. I sat on the porch and watched it unfold.
It's like when I'm walking through the snow and I see a couple baby seals.
I've got it. I just happen to be carrying my club along. I'm like, I really shouldn't.
But they're there.
But they're there and I'm here.
And they're so unsuspecting.
They're coming up for cuddles and hugs. They're like the koala fish.
Come here, you cute little seal.
I'm quietly crying in the corner here.
Poor Kara.
Oh.
I'm flipping the page. We're horrible people.
Yeah, we're talking.
Except yours is fictional. Mine was real. I'm a horrible person.
Yeah, but you aren't clubbing baby seals.
Turning a sprinkler on isn't quite morally tantamount to clubbing a seal.
End of the world as we know it. It's an article by Earl Krebs.
He's an author and a professor at the Assembly of God.
Which you have personal experience with?
I do. He is a professor at the Assemblies of God Theological Seminary. Back in my days doing campus ministry, I actually attended some seminars that he did, and they're always fantastic. And he just really gets like generational differences and stuff like that. Just really brilliant guy. And he wrote an article about basically how Christ showing up on earth completely flip-flops everything we knew about the world. And you're just going to have to read it. It's really, really, really good. And it's very deep in a very short amount of time.
Which is space. Like exactly what I enjoy. Deep in a short amount of time.
He cuts right to the chase.
He does.
Flipping the page, we have an interview, a multi-page interview with Shepard Fairey, the founder of Obey. If you know anything about street art or urban culture, Obey is kind of an icon. It's that Andre the Giant stencil is kind of what they started with.
Yeah,
Their ads have been in our magazine for a while.
Yeah, yeah, they advertise. Shepard Fairey is the guy who started it. It is definitely just started as this kind of like countercultural experiment of propaganda to see how people would react. It was kind of just one large social experiment. Now they actually he founded a magazine called Swindle. He has a design studio, and obviously Obey apparel and art has exploded. So there's an article with him, just kind of like his story. I really think his story is interesting about his childhood and how this whole subversive counterculture thing started to emerge in him.
Yeah.
Nature versus nurture, folks. Stuff, I mean, I think just it's eye-opening. It's really cool.
It really is.
It was a fun story just because I know, like, I had been curious about sort of his agenda, but the thing that's interesting is it's anti-agenda.
Yeah.
It's visuals for the sake of provocative visuals.
Without giving anything away, the cool thing is it kind of shows a lot of his motivations. And the last line, I think, in the story is so telling as to his motivations for why he does what he does.
One of my favorite stories in the issue, though I'm a big Shepard fan, flipping the page, is actually an article written by Holly Ordway. It's called An Atheist's Unexpected Journey to Faith.
Actually, I ran into Holly virtually when I was working on my book, Cheap Ways to Tie the Knot. She had a...
Nice plug.
Sure.
Cheapways2.com?
Yes. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Holly had been profiled on CNN as being an extreme saver. And so she has this blog called SpendingWisely.com.
That doesn't mean like an evangelist.
Yes.
It's a financial thing.
That's like that sounds like a youth group outreach. Extreme saver.
Actually, and she wasn't a Christian at the time, but she had some, you know, neat insights into the world of finance. And so I contacted her about telling her story in my book. And then she ended up writing a couple of things for us. And I didn't talk to her for a year or more, probably. Got an email out of the blue from her a few weeks ago and said, I'm a Christian now. And just kind of recounted her journey of how this happened, and I was just floored and just so excited. So I said, you have to tell your story for our readers in our magazine. So this is the first time she's ever really, you know, published or talked about her story, and it's just raw and real. And the cool thing about it is she's really intellectual, especially if you have friends who, you know, have a lot of theological questions about, you know, about Christ or God or whatever. She was one of those, and she just kind of outlines her journey, and it's really fascinating.
And it's intellectually written, but it's also just really beautifully written.
Yeah, it's incredible. Definitely check that out. That brings us up to the New Music Guide 07. 8 big trends and 86 artists to watch this year. And I'm not going to play 86 clips. So the first trend, I'm not going to talk through the trends, I'm not going to, but we do spotlight a couple of key artists, and that's all I'm going to do here. It's a major section of the magazine, so you got to read it to experience the full thing. But the first artist that I'm going to bring attention to is Paige France, who is featured right there here at the beginning. And here is one of their songs called Chariot.
Watching Circus King and dance like elephants as he comes to us through a fiery golden ring with a violin and a song to sing.
It's so good. Paige France is amazing and full of Christian symbolism.
Another one featured is actually one that got a lot of buzz last year. Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. Here's a clip of their one of their new songs, Over and Over Again, Lost and Found. We also...
Yeah.
Yeah. He's clapping his hands and saying yeah.
Yeah. I have to do that joke every time I hear them.
Yeah. You know, also on the harder tip, we got ones like Chasing Victory and The Showdown coming out. And that, you know, we're definitely, even at Relevant TV, playing a lot of that stuff. But here is Temptation Come My Way, right off the new Showdown album by the same name.
Is that a face melter?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
On the indie tip, we actually spotlight a couple pages, spotlight indie bands from all over the country. We actually took it by geography in Midwest, Southeast, Northeast. One of the bands that we're big fans of here in the office is actually called Band Marino, which I love the name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not Dan. It's not Band. A new solo album. It's Band Marino. Band Marino will actually be here performing live in the studio next week. So definitely tune back in for next week's live performance from Band Marino. Flipping the page, after the Amber Lynn cover story, we actually have a very cool, very eye-opening feature with none other than Chaos. Chaos is from Canada, and you know, we've heard his music for a while. Real, really cool, very eclectic, progressive hip-hop, live music, a lot of different styles. It's not just hip-hop, it's rock, it's soul, it's funk, it's all these things. It's very, very innovative. And the thing that's always perplexed us is that there's always this very strong spiritual language. I mean, he does stuff like on the new album, he talks, you know, he has a single called Sunday Morning. He has another song that talks about growing up in the church. You know, just there's all this kind of like crying out to God subtly in his lyrics. His music is known to be clean and very spiritual, very positive. So we're thinking, read between the lines here. Dude's got to be Christian background, grew up in the church, he references some things. So Adam had the chance to talk to him and found out that that wasn't quite the case.
Not quite. He actually grew up in a very strict Jehovah's Witness household. And his dad was an elder in the Jehovah's Witness church, which if you know anything about the way the church is structured, the elders actually do the speaking. You know, they'll take turns doing speaking and whatnot. So almost the equivalent of being a pastor's kid. And so he grew up with this background. And then in college, actually got into the writings of an Eastern mystic, an Indian philosopher. So all of this has made for a very interesting perspective on life and faith, kind of a bizarre mishmash of stuff. Just a really, really fascinating guy.
And he's really very much on a spiritual journey seeking truth, and it's just interesting. And, you know, and out there, you know, some people may say, well, why are you promoting this kind of all paths to heaven thing? No, we're not at all. But the guy's out there making very spiritually messaged music that's positive and is bringing kind of spiritual conversations into a scene that doesn't typically have them. He's trying to be a positive influence. So we want to talk to him. And just sitting down having a conversation and learning more about him and his perspective, you know, puts his music in a unique context. And if you haven't heard any of it, a few podcasts ago or a couple months ago, we played the song Sunday Morning, which was very cool. This is a song called The Rain. So here's The Rain by Chaos.
You say you love me, but then you turn and walk away. All for love, not even born yesterday. I see you on the streets, and
and you just pass me by. You think I got no feelings?
Man, that's slow. Man,
this is good music.
A lot of people don't know that's actually Cameron on guitar, on electric.
Who does this remind you of a little bit? Maybe.
A robot.
Up until that point, I was going to say Prince. Has a Prince feel to it.
It does.
And that's a cool thing about Chaos, is that he has such an eclectic range. Like, honestly, like...
And it's not forced. I mean, like, so you have that... All. And then the next track on the album is old school hip hop, and it flows perfectly.
Yeah.
My favorite song, and a lot of people's favorite song, is Sunday Morning. So in the page, we had a Q&A article with Jumzetta, the buzz band on Tooth & Nail Records.
The whole dance rock thing is kind of been evolving for a while, but I really feel like their pop sense of it is cool. They got a definitely cool indie rock, you know, upbeat feel to them.
Here's a sample of Get Ready Hot Machete by Jumzetta. See, there's the Christian message right there. They're bringing bodies back to life. That's like Jesus.
Mm-hmm. They're bringing bodies back to life to dance.
We also spotlighted The Almost. The Almost just released a new album.
They're actually simultaneously on Tooth & Nail and Virgin.
That's right. Virgin.
It is Aaron Gillespie from Under Oath. And, you know, he tours with the band, but it's pretty much just him.
This is Say This Sooner. No one will ever see things the way I do. Kind of takes us to reviews and the end of the issue. The one thing I wanted to note at the end of the magazine, you know, table of contents is still there and will remain there. However, in the letter section of this issue, I kind of leaked the news that Last Word will reemerge next issue and find its rightful place in a very prominent position in the magazine. Just not at the end. It's going to be the somewhere cover. Else in the magazine. Yes.
That would make our jobs a lot easier.
Yeah. A lot easier. No, well, it's just going to be the entire magazine.
Yeah.
Apparently all the letters were, it's my favorite part of the magazine. So now you're going to get 100 pages of it.
Thank you.
Actually, just one. We're just going to send them a Last Word, and that's the magazine.
Okay, so that'll do it for your new issue preview. Up next, your feedback. Listening to a band with the song called We're Here. The band is either pronounced Guillemots or Guillemots. I'm going to go with Guillemots, but in case I'm wrong, I'm going to say it phonetically, Guillemots. Guillemots, that's it. Anyway, playing right now over at relevant.tv. Okay, so last week we asked what show should replace The OC on Fox's schedule. Not a real show, but one that you make up, and you have to tell us the concept behind the show. We're going to only read two or three of the replies because this podcast is running so long, but you guys send in some very colorful and creative answers. So
Clark Pappas wrote in, and he actually wants to make two half-hour shows combining one family's journey. Now, the first half-hour show is called Parenting with the Stars. It's kind of like Wife Swap or Dancing with the Stars, but parents trade places with another family, except that their children will be in the care of a celebrity.
Oh, no.
That's a good idea.
So irreparably damaged.
Right. Yeah. It says the show would highlight the misadventures of the celebrities interacting with the children. Who wouldn't want to hear Busey's thoughts on brushing your teeth before bedtime or find out how Charo picks out kids' clothes?
Now, the real drama of the show comes full circle in the second half hour show. It's called The Amazing Dash Home. It will document the drama when parents find out through a series of challenges that their children are home with Uncle OJ.
Wrong.
Very wrong. The parents will somehow need to get across the country with no money or credit cards as soon as humanly possible. Parents will need to go from challenge to challenge to raise the funds for the long journey home. Better yet, we may see the father attempt to hotwire the closest car or stowaway on the Amtrak. So I really like the idea of, you know, putting someone's kids with Busey.
Yeah, with C-list. Yeah, with C-list celebrities. Yeah,
That's being generous. Okay. Brian Cody wrote in. He's from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. So he has a lot of extra U's in his spellings. His idea for a show to replace the OC, I didn't even know they had the OC up there. Did they even know what that is? What's a county?
I thought it was the BC.
Yeah. What's a county? The what?
Yeah.
A Mountie?
The Orange Mountie. That's what they thought it was.
Yeah, and it's a show about an Orange Mountie. Yeah.
It's a Canadian knockoff of the OC. Okay.
It's due north.
He wrote in and said that the show to replace the OC would follow the adventures of a globetrotting flying squirrel named Bucky Glides. The show...
Bucky Glides.
The show...
I love it that his name is a complete sentence. The show...
Good for you. You paid attention in grammar class. The show called... Bucky Glides, Champion of the Skies, would follow many of Bucky's adventures, such as the pilot episode detailing Bucky's dissatisfaction with his jungle home, leading to a record-setting jet stream glide across the Atlantic to land in beautiful form atop the Statue of Liberty's torch. Other such adventures would include Bucky gliding to victory in the Boston Marathon and leading the land-bound squirrels of North America in a resistance effort against the oppressive bat army. Though constantly battling between the state of contentment and complacency, Bucky is the ultimate model for us and all squirrel kind, that with a little determination and large folds of skin attached to our limbs, anything is possible.
Oh, I love it that Brian, he described him as the land-bound squirrels worldwide. Yeah.
Earth-bound not just squirrels.
Not just squirrels.
Yeah. Non-flying or flightless.
You know, it really is true that with a little determination and large folds of skin attached to our limbs, anything is possible.
I've always said that. Okay, Stephanie Hornblower. That's all. No.
And I'm done.
Good night. Thanks, everybody. You've been great.
We'll see you next week, folks.
Yeah. She wrote in, she says, the show I would
she
choose.
She wrote in.
She wrote in.
I love how that is not actually.
Who's the grammarian here? Evidently not me. She says, the show I would choose to replace the OC is Narcoosy Nights. Here's its description.
So that's the back alleys of Orlando.
Yes. In the dark streets and back alleys of Orlando, Florida, there's a strong and silent hero. He is Smitty Vanderstrongen, health inspector. Vanderstrongen has the cool, calm leadership of Jean-Luc Picard, shares an intense desire for all things clean with the detective Monk, and has the same carefully styled hair and zest for life that Fonzie from Happy Days is so famous for. Inspector Vanderstrongen is played by Joan Griffith, star of the Horatio Hornblower, is she related, series on PBS, with his iconic curly locks. So it seems that this kind of centers around flying squirrels intent upon messing up his hair, occasionally calling on Callahan McIver for help, and he drives around a red Mini Cooper S and is assisted by the Mandrabbit.
Whoa, that thing's naked.
Wait, actually it said that the Mandrabbit auditioned for the role but was denied for obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons, because it's naked.
Yeah.
It's good.
Kara Davis also tried out for the role but was turned down because she was overqualified. Rumor has it that Jesse Carey is being considered for the role and his chances look good. The soundtrack would be a collaborative effort between Jeff Moore and the Distance Reunited and Leonard Cohen. Wow. So
sounds like a great show.
Smitty Vanderstrongen.
Especially that
health inspector.
Yeah, especially that the show is about a health inspector, but the plot is about flying squirrels trying to mess up his hair.
Yeah. I didn't watch it. See a whole lot of health inspecting in it, but that's good.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Now, did you guys see the email that was sent in that the real Callahan McIver got engaged?
Oh, good for you, Callahan.
And
Maisie finally said yes.
to his, Callahan.
I love you, Maisie. I've loved you my whole life.
What's so funny is that this fictional character is so real to me. I forget he's an actual human being. Right. So when somebody wrote in and said, hey, I'm friends with Callahan McIver, and he got engaged this week, I thought...
You goofball.
Yeah. So funny, keeping the flying squirrel and Callahan McIver thing going.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're a real person.
Yeah.
With feelings.
Can we send him some sort of weird engagement present?
A caber?
There's got to be something laying around that would be funny.
I think we should be invited to the wedding, and we should all come in kilts.
Yeah.
I think we should all be in the wedding party.
I think we should be in the wedding party.
We really should. You know, Callahan.
I should perform the ceremony.
Yeah, Callahan. Actually, well, not anymore. I was going to say I was once actually legally licensed to do such
in
things.
In Kentucky.
You let it lapse because of the alcoholism?
Yes. But Callahan, if you're listening, we will be in your wedding party. If you offer us the opportunity, you know.
Where does he live? Kentucky or something?
No, it's
Scotland. Yeah. Scotland Yard.
And Maisie. McIver.
Lucky woman.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
It's finally worked out.
That's awesome. Good for them. You know,
that sounds like
I feel like we brought them together.
Yeah, like probably she heard that and she thought, you know, Callahan really has some legitimacy now.
Yeah, she was like, wow, his name was mentioned on a podcast. You know what? Maybe I can marry this guy.
Yeah. I think he'll be a good provider.
Tonight on a very special Callahan McIver.
Maisie, shall ye be me wife? Don't make me get down on one knee in this kilt. It'll be obscene. Would ye do me the honor of joining me in holy matrimony?
Oh, Callahan, I thought you'd never ask.
Look out! What? This calls for me kicking of justice.
Two people come together, and one of them
gets attacked by a flying squirrel.
Look out! It's some kind of flying rodent.
Oh, my hair!
I'll save your golden tresses, Maisie.
Ripped from the headlines. A Callahan McIver for you and your whole family.
Say no to drugs, kids.
It doesn't get old.
Still good. Still fresh.
Still fresh. We just popped the can on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, so now with this week's editorial question of the week. Here we go.
Editorial question of the week. Hey.
We want you to tell us about a local need that you know of, like a community service project that needs to be done. Describe it. Describe how you're affiliated or involved with the need, and we'll look through these and talk about five of them on the podcast, and then set up a thread where and offer the podcast listeners to get involved, you know, either if they're local to come lend a hand, if there's some sort of organized effort, or to send money, or just pray about the situation. So send us your stories to editorial@relevantmagazine.com or feedback@relevantmagazine.com.
So we're going to try and take it a little deeper this time. Mm-hmm. I like it.
This is called The Podcast Gives Back, 2007.
The one time the podcast will give back. Oh, that's sad. I like it. We're using our platform for good, not evil. It's
good. Not mockery.
Yeah, cool. So right in. Okay, and now a little bit of relevant updates. I got a minor one, and then Kara has one. That just this week, Flynn, the producer of this podcast and video producer and music producer here at Relevant, and most well known for his actual music career, being part of LA Symphony, is finishing up a solo album, and he has posted new tracks to his MySpace page. So you can go over to myspace.com/FlynnAdam. It's FLYNN Adam. The reason why I mention it is we get actually every week quite a few emails asking what was this song that I heard? And 9 times out of 10, it's been songs that Flynn has done and just like leaked on the podcast without telling anybody. And so there's obviously been a lot of buzz about some of the stuff he's been working on. And so he finally put up 3-4 tracks online, and you should definitely go check it out and support him as an artist, because and I'm not saying this because he's a friend, he's making some amazing music right now.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah. I posted a lot of new tracks for my Robert Goulet project on my MySpace page.
Oh yeah, that's good. Actually, I'm going to play a little bit of a track. We were playing the new music stuff earlier. I'm going to play a little bit of a track that Flynn actually has up over at YouTube. He was playing around with some video stuff last weekend, and he made this thing, a little video, put it up on YouTube. I love the song. Also, there's also another video he put up there of him in the studio recording. It's kind of a behind-the-scenes thing of recording the album. And you see Gibb, who's a friend and drummer and artist as well, and you see my brother. My brother actually played guitar and drums on a whole bunch of Flynn's tracks, including the one you're about to hear. So, well, anyway, here's a little preview of one of Flynn's new tracks.
Hey yo, here I go. Got a funky new tune with a marching band, yo. Added water into the mixture. Don't rain on my parade, let me pose for this picture. LES for a while, been in it for a minute, pushing limits with our style.
That's Flynn.
He's awesome.
That song actually isn't on his MySpace page, but that song is over at YouTube. Just search for Flynn Adam and you'll find it. But
but don't tell him we told you. I mean, he's going to hear all this anyway.
Yeah, he's going to be like, why are there 23,000 views of my video? Anyway, I'm proud of him. This is awesome music. He's doing good stuff, big things. And he actually worked on most of the album here in the Relevant studio. So very cool. Not to prolong the rest of the announcements, Kara has one.
I'm with Child.
Yay!
Yeah.
Clap your hands and say yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what child are you with?
I'm having a girl.
Yes.
In July.
And,
I am married.
Oh.
For those who don't know.
That's a long overdue update.
Yeah, just last week we tied the knot. Just kidding.
Trashy ways to tie the knot.
Cheap ways to tie the knot.
That we're very, very excited. This would be, I guess, the only relevant newborn. You know, right now, I mean, there's a couple,
yes.
There's one older child.
And the first employee to give birth, probably.
That's true.
True. We're very, very, very excited.
So the second editorial question of the week is, name that baby.
And the name with the most votes gets it.
It's legally binding.
Yeah. McIver Davis.
That would be a decent name.
If you were Scottish in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
What about Maisie?
It's my dog's name.
Yeah, it's a girl. Mm. Maisie's your dog?
Macy.
Well, close. Then it should be Maisie.
Yes. That's not like that at all.
What about Mavis?
Staples.
Mavis Davis.
Yeah. Mavis Davis.
That'd be kind of cool.
Or Betty.
Hey, Kara, are you leaning any direction as far as names go?
No.
Really?
So you really are wide open here?
Yes.
So people really could write in, and there may be one that you go, I really like that.
Yes, I need ideas.
I always like the name Dakota, and I...
Because you're a big fan of Dakota Fanning?
No, I thought it was a cool guy's name.
Ah.
But, really?
Yeah, but then I just had a cousin that had a kid and named him Dakota, therefore rendering it useless to me.
For years, liked the name. I saw this really, really cool kid once, and he's like 2, and he was named Boston, and I thought that was the dopest name. And
Boston.
So forever, I wanted to name my kid Boston until it dawned on me my last name is Strang, and it'd be Boston Strangler.
Glare. Yeah.
Yeah. The old man.
Boston. Yeah, I mean, seriously, it never even dawned on me for like 10 years, and I would tell people I'm gonna name my kid Boston.
Yeah. It's a great name, though.
Boston. I have a friend, and he actually, I believe he's a listener to the show, and he has 2 little girls, and one of them name is Montana, and the other one's name is Savannah, and I thought those are both cool names.
What about
is his next child gonna be Hannah?
That's his wife's name.
Shut up.
His wife's name is Hannah.
Well, next child will be Anna.
The next child is going to be like St. Augustine.
But they all kind of have that Hannah, Savannah, Montana.
So Syriana.
Syriana. I like it.
What about
Rwanda?
Steve Perry Davis.
Nice. I was thinking Lionel.
Ooh, it's a good one.
Lionel Davis.
For a girl, that's very feminine, yeah. but strong.
Yeah. Yeah. See, Steve Perry could be all one name. Steve Perry Davis.
All right, well, so write in to Kara, actually, but we want to see them too. So write in to editorial@relevantmagazine.com or feedback@relevantmagazine.com. Congratulations to Kara. Name suggestions for Kara. Anything you want us to post on the wall, you know, like you could fax things, you could draw things. We'll surround her with congratulations and happy thoughts.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're very, very, very excited.
Yes, and this is also the reason why I periodically nap during the podcast. So over the last few months.
It's kind of you to say tiring. That.
She's forming another human inside of her, so it
like a super her machine. Energy.
Kara, it's kind of you to say that, but I'm pretty sure the reason you nap during the podcast is because of us talking.
Utter boredom.
Yeah.
Guys, you're not boring me to tears
Complete
at all.
Complete absurdity. Yeah. I'd rather escape into sleep. Yeah,
it's why she leaves. Why she curses at us in the hall. It's all because she's having a baby.
Yes, those hormones.
Well, I guess on that note, that'll wrap up this week's podcast. This week's incredibly long podcast. Many thanks for sticking around. Thank you to Don Miller for coming through last week and talking with us. We always look forward to his visits. Make sure to pick up the new issue of Relevant Magazine. Help us out and pick it up at newsstands near you. And if you don't get it, go ahead and subscribe. Come on over to relevantmagazine.com. You can get it right now. Don't forget about the huge store sale going on at relevantstore.com. You can actually get the new issue over there as well. And make sure to tune in next week for a live in-studio performance by none other than Band Marino. So on that note, we'll wrap the podcast. I am Cameron Strang.
I'm Davis Davis.
I'm Mavis Davis.
And I'm Ezekiel Davis.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah. Come on.
Relevant Podcast. Anytime, anywhere.
Say no to drugs, kids.